Welcome to the August 2025 News Bulletin podcast for yacht and small craft marine surveyors, put together by the International Institute of Marine Surveying. We open our podcast with an introduction from IIMS CEO Mike Schwartz. Dear colleague, I am returning to another favorite hobby horse of mine this month, that old nugget of where will the next generation of marine surveyors come from? It is far from clear to me, and others who I meet, and I do not have an easy answer. Why am I motivated to bring this to your attention again? I believe that those who have had a successful career as a professional marine surveyor should be encouraged to help develop those who will follow in their footsteps and ensure the future of this noble profession. However, it is not just the marine surveying profession that needs to face up to these significant challenges. Many sectors are now utilizing AI technology to replace the human factor, but I remain skeptical that this innovation will replace the role of the hands-on marine surveyor in the short to mid-term. But I take encouragement from initiatives being undertaken in other areas of the marine sector, and let me share just one worthwhile scheme with you. Anglo Eastern is launching Mission 30, an initiative to increase the proportion of its management level officers, i.e. captain, chief officer, chief engineer, and second engineer, under the age of 30 from 1% to 30% by 2030. Now that is a bold target. The company says that in light of the evolving crewing landscape, a tightening talent pool, and the increasing demands for diverse skill sets among seafarers, Anglo Eastern is looking ahead to cultivate a young, agile workforce for management-level positions at sea. Perhaps we are simply faced with a scenario where the next generation wants to do things differently and earn their income in new ways. Whatever the reason for a lack of talent coming through, as an industry we have a responsibility to ensure we encourage and develop the next generation of professional marine surveyors, train and mentor them. Failure to do so will be a serious issue for the boating and shipping industries in the longer term. For much of the past month, I have been traveling. I made my first trip to meet members and others at an IIMS-hosted event in Auckland. My visit coincided with a dramatic storm which hit New Zealand, but that did little to dampen the spirits of those who attended. I'd like to express my gratitude, in particular, to long-standing IIMS member, Stan Collette, who encouraged me to make the long journey, and I am glad I did. It was also a great opportunity to spend time with representatives from Maritime New Zealand, the country's regulator, and I extend my thanks to Mark Potter and his team. We have plenty to discuss over the coming months, it seems too. Those who spoke at the event did so with passion for their subjects, and I have left with the overall impression that the New Zealand surveying profession and those involved in driving new technology are at the top of the game. Leaving behind the indifferent Auckland climate, I headed for Brisbane on Australia's east coast. I hosted a two-day seminar for a group of highly engaged IIMS members, students, and others. I'd like to express my deep thanks to Miku Bati, who assembled such a powerful and varied speaker lineup across the 2 days. Sadly, Mick was unable to be at the event due to unforeseen personal reasons. Topics presented covered corrosion, welding inspections, conducting damage surveys, the impact of AI on surveying, mentoring and electrical surveying. We also heard from Justin and Ash, who work for AMSA, the Australian regulator. I also met Andrew Fielding, CEO of the Boating Industry Association, and had time to chat with him. We have agreed to continue our dialogue going forward. The Boating Industry Association Limited is the peak industry body in Australia that represents the interests of boating. As a not-for-profit organisation led by industry for industry, their mission is to support their members to build thriving marine businesses. Following both events, the feedback I have received, both directly and indirectly, has been extraordinary, and I am grateful to all those who made me feel so welcome and who listened so intently to the presenters. If I have one regret, it is simply I wish I had made it to Australasia sooner than I did. To bring this column right back to where I started, those I met in both New Zealand and Australia also put the next generation of marine surveyors as one of the key priorities and concerns. It seems this really is a worldwide challenge, and we must join together to do what we can to develop and train new talent into the marine surveying sector. Survey well, Mike. For our first segment, we'd like to remind you that there's still time to book onto a couple of our events. The first one we'd like to showcase is our Canada 2025 branch conference in Hamilton on the 22nd and 23rd of October. The local committee is pleased to announce a new date for this event, which was postponed earlier this year. Join us in person or online. Find out more at iimscanada.ca. We also have our practical surveying course in Lyme Regis, the UK, between the 1st and 4th of December 2025. Hosted at the Boat Building Academy facilities, IIMS presents the third edition of its popular residential practical surveyor course. There are only 12 spaces, so book early to avoid disappointment. This is an opportunity to be under the guidance and tutelage of three highly experienced, senior marine surveyors as you work alongside them, inspecting and surveying three vessels over 3 days. The morning of day four is dedicated to report writing techniques. For more details, visit iiams.org.uk/events. Next up, how to choose the right marine surveying professional development course for you. And guidance on what to watch out for. Let's face it, education and training in the maritime sector does not come cheap. So, it is important to do some research before settling on your preferred provider. EYIMS has become increasingly aware of course providers who are not all they appear to be. This article offers some practical and valuable advice before you sign up. Today, it seems easy to get duped by seductive social media promotion and marketing, and one International Institute of Marine Surveying member is urging others to do their due diligence before signing up for a professional development course. Firstly, has your chosen education provider achieved an internationally recognized standard? IIMS has taken considerable time, effort and money to gain the internationally recognized ISO 9001 certification with the scope of training services in marine surveying. That means we work to a quality standard that is monitored internally and audited annually by DNV, and we have just come through our first audit since certification was granted last year with no major or minor non-conformities. Read the full article on the IIMS website. For our first story, the Transportation Safety Board of Canada's annual report for 2024-25 has been published, marking 35 years of advancing transportation safety. Since its inception in 1990, TSB has completed more than 2,000 investigations, made more than 630 recommendations, and issued hundreds of safety communications. Over the years, more than 84% of the responses to the board's recommendations have been assessed as fully satisfactory, demonstrating the TSB's concrete impact on the improvement of safety. Marine Transportation Safety, the Year in Review. The TSB received 951 reports of marine transportation occurrences in 2024. The total of 213 marine transportation accidents represents a decrease from the 243 accidents in 2023 and is below the 10-year average of 274. In 2024, 85% were shipping accidents, when a ship, for example, sinks, founders, or capsizes, slightly more than 83% on average over the previous 10 years. The remaining 15% of accidents in 2024 were aboard ship, when a person is seriously or fatally injured, for example, when boarding a ship or by falling overboard, just below the 10-year annual average of 17%. The 12 marine transportation fatalities represent a 33% reduction from the 2023 total of 18 and the 10-year average of 15. Of the 12 fatalities, 8 involve shipping accidents, slightly fewer than the average of 9 per year. As in previous years, a high proportion of the fatalities were related to commercial fishing. Due to this continuing trend, commercial fishing safety remains a key safety issue on the TSB's watchlist. Download the full report at iiimscanada.ca. Next, Germany's Federal Bureau for Maritime Casualty Investigation has also published its BSU annual report for 2024, providing insights on marine casualties. The total number of notifications has dropped year on year, 625 in 2024 compared to 698 in 2023. This equals a reduction of about 10%. Unfortunately, this is not yet cause for celebration, as the number of marine casualties according to the IMO code, i.e., accidents that had serious consequences, has remained stable at a high level. Compared to previous years, the figures for 2024 demonstrate that it was another relatively busy year for accidents, with marine casualties remaining consistently high. It comes as no surprise that there are fluctuations in the categories, especially between SMC and LSMC. The SMCs mainly concern grounded vessels that have to be refloated. It is pleasing to note that the number of very serious marine casualties remains low. As in previous years, the most frequently identified technical cause was damage to the main engine. Such damage, or to the rudder, is often classified as a serious marine casualty for regulatory reasons. While these incidents typically go unnoticed by the public and have no direct consequences, they still pose significant risks. Accidents attributed to human error were again primarily due to simple navigational mistakes and errors in judgment. The latter typically involves miscalculations or momentary lapses in decision-making. Incidents resulting from inadequate occupational safety measures also remained common, often causing injuries and, in one case, resulting in a fatality. Such fatalities continue to occur on a regular basis. You can read the report at www.bsu-bund.de. For our next story, Bavaria Yachts will offer electric and hybrid propulsion options on its C38E, C42E and C46E sailing yachts from the third quarter 2025, using systems supplied by EP Technologies. The German shipyard says the new electric and hybrid yachts retain the core performance and comfort features of Bavaria's Sea Line models, while adding an alternative drive system with a reduced environmental footprint. Propulsion is delivered via a sail drive connected to a 25-kilowatt electric motor on the C38E and C42E, and a 37-kilowatt motor on the C46E. The drive system is integrated with EP Technologies' Multibox, which manages battery charging and overall system operation. Standard battery capacity on the C38E and C42E is 18.2 kilowatt-hours, with the option to expand using additional battery packs, offering a range up to 50 nautical miles on electric power alone. The C46E includes two battery packs as standard. For extended range, an optional generator can be added, converting the system into a hybrid solution. This setup can reportedly provide up to 576 nautical miles of range on the C38E at a cruising speed of 5.5 knots. Up next, in what promises to be one of the unique entrants into the growing luxury segment of the cruise market, Orient Express Corinthian, 26,200 gross tons, was floated out. At 727 feet, 220 meters, in length and accommodations for 110 passengers, it will be the world's largest sail yacht and the launch of the famed Orient Express and French Accor Group into the cruise market. The float-out took place on June 16 at the Chantiers de l'Atlantique shipyard in Saint-Nazaire, France. First steel for the vessel was cut in March 2024 and assembly began at the beginning of this year. It was moved from the dry dock to the fitting-out berth with its maiden voyage scheduled for June 2026. The hull was built from 14 structural blocks and the vessel features three balustrade rigs that are a unique base for the masts and sails. The bases pivot and tilt to increase the performance of the three rigid sails. Each mast will stand 100 meters, 328 feet, supporting 16,146 square feet of rigid sails. The sails will also fold down when not in use. The unique sail concept was developed by Chantiers de l'Atlantique and this is the first commercial installation after years of testing. The propulsion system will be unique for a cruise ship of this size able to sail 100% under renewable power in the right conditions. Backing up the sails when required is a hybrid propulsion system powered by liquefied natural gas. For our next report, in summer 2024, the UK Maritime and Coast Guard Agency ran a survey campaign focused on workboat code vessels in the UK ports around the UK were strategically visited by MCA surveyors, and workboats were surveyed in line with the workboat code, respective editions. Here is a brief overview of the campaign highlights. 255 vessels were surveyed, 160 vessels were found to have deficiencies, 95 vessels had no deficiencies, 12 prohibition notices were served, and 3 vessels were detained. The most common areas where deficiencies were found are 212 findings of expired, incorrectly fitted and poorly maintained firefighting and life-saving equipment, 118 documentation findings, and 52 machinery findings. In our next segment, the Cruising Yacht Club of Australia has published the full independent review report into the three incidents in the 2024 Rolex Sydney Hobart Yacht Race, which tragically saw two fatalities and a man overboard incident. The 79th edition of the Rolex Sydney Hobart Yacht Race produced its usual spectacular start from Sydney Harbour on Thursday 26 December 2024 with 104 boats, including 23 double-handers, making their way out of Sydney Harbour. There was a challenging weather forecast, with a gale warning, expected to bring hard, strong wind running conditions, building seas and an abrupt, strong southwesterly change within the first 24 hours. These conditions were a major contributor to several serious incidents that included two fatalities, one person overboard and separated from the boat, three other serious injuries, three boats dismasted and 14 retirements over the first night. Key changes the CYCA will make include, requiring 50% of crew, including the person in charge, to complete the qualifying race or passage on the boat entered, unless exceptional circumstances apply. Mandate AISMOB devices for Category 1 and 2 races, a requirement already implemented by the CYCA following the 2024 race. Record and share a heavy weather and downwind sailing seminar ahead of the Noakes Sydney Gold Coast Yacht Race, the start of the Audi Centre Sydney Blue Water Point Score. Review and clarify satellite communication requirements, including publishing an approved list of acceptable satellite phone systems. Record and share a communication seminar to assist crews with best practice offshore communications protocols. Simplify the race entry process. A new online race entry portal has been under development since December 2024. Provide Australian Sailing with information to support updates to the Sea Safety and Survival course, including lessons from the successful MOB recovery and increased awareness of boom brakes, preventers and harness release systems. Read the full report at iamsaustralia.com.au. Next, the US Coast Guard has issued a warning regarding issues related to fire detection systems on towing vessels that are not type approved by the Coast Guard, but are instead certified by a nationally recognized testing laboratory. According to the Coast Guard, even though fire detection systems may be accompanied by a certification letter issued by an authorized entity, a recent Coast Guard investigation revealed that some NRTL-approved systems may have potential shortcomings and oversight gaps. 1. A system listed by ANRTL may not be rated, tested for use in a marine environment. Fire detection system components that have not been rated, tested for marine use may be more susceptible to malfunction from exposure to the moisture, temperature fluctuations, vibration, and corrosive agents, such as salt, common in the marine environment. 2. Unlike Coast Guard type-approved fire detection systems, there is currently no process or requirement in place for manufacturers to notify the Coast Guard of design defects and safety recalls for components in non-Coast Guard-approved fire detection systems. This greatly increases the chances of defective or recalled components going unnoticed. 3. The certification letters provided to meet the requirements of 46 CFR 142.330 and other documentation for the installed fire detection system may not include a list of the make, model, type, number, or location of devices installed in a vessel's fire detection system. Without knowing the specific equipment installed, a company or organization responsible for regulatory oversight cannot determine when a vessel is affected by a critical safety recall, or when modifications have been made to the system that warrant recertification. Furthermore, a lack of familiarity with installed equipment may lead to improper maintenance, testing, and replacement intervals for critical detection components such as heat or smoke detectors. You can read more, including what the Coast Guard strongly recommends vessel owners, vessel crew, fire alarm servicing personnel, and third-party surveyors do, at iamsusa.com. Up next, the Washington Department of Natural Resources is taking an unusual approach to dealing with derelict vessels that wash up on remote shorelines. In a recent cleanup project, it used helicopters to lift 14 boats from the shoreline of Squaxin Island in Puget Sound. Using its wildfire helicopters and ground personnel, DNR conducted the operation as part of its derelict vessel removal program. The boats had been washed ashore or left behind to deteriorate, posing a serious risk to the island's ecosystem. Because of their deteriorated state, floating the boats out was not an option. Through a $1 million grant from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, DNR was able to fund the operation, partnering with the Squaxin tribe and the Port of Olympia. A total of 14 abandoned vessels were airlifted and flown across Budd Inlet to DNR's marine station, north of Squaxin Park in Olympia, where they will be stored awaiting proper disposal. DNR says that abandoned vessels have become a menace to Washington's waterways, posing risks to public safety and the health of the marine environment. Since instituting the derelict vessel removal program in 2002, the department has removed more than 1,200 abandoned or neglected vessels from Washington's waterways. For our next report, shipping company HGK Shipping has been authorized to conduct the first remote-controlled inland waterway vessel on the German canal network for 6 months. After the push-barge combination consisting of Niedersachsen II and Hanover had completed test operations on one part of the route without any problems at the beginning of May, Europe's largest inland waterway shipping company has now been given the green light for this new phase by the German General Directorate for Waterways and Shipping. HGK Shipping has been pushing ahead with using SEFA technology for some time in order to be able to counter the enormous shortage of skilled workers among skippers. Stefan Bauer, the CEO of HGK Shipping, said, "We're putting our faith in increasingly digitalizing inland waterway shipping together with our technology partner, CIFA, which is operating a so-called remote operations center in Duisburg, in addition to modernizing our fleet. This is an effective lever to increase the attractiveness of this profession when seeking to attract qualified workers. Remote controlled operations on a trial basis with a full crew on board were previously allowed on the River Rhine with a Belgian permit on the basis of the relevant recommendations from the Central Commission for the Navigation of the Rhine. A full crew will still be on board the vessel during this new test phase, which will be performed on the German canal network between the communities in Scharnbeck and Salzgitter. The next stage of the test program could then mean operating refitted vessels with a reduced crew. The aim is to use personnel in a more flexible manner and enable skippers to spend more time on dry land. And for our final report, Lloyd's Register has extended the closing date for its Yacht Safety Culture and Wellbeing Survey. Originally scheduled to close on the 30th of June, the survey will now remain open until the 30th of September in response to high demand. Yacht crew and management from all departments and levels are encouraged to participate, with confidentiality and anonymity for all respondents. The initiative, launched in April 2025, is part of Lloyd Register's commitment to enhance safety standards, reduce incidents and embed well-being at the heart of yacht operations. The 30-minute survey collects anonymized data on safety practices, incident reporting, crew health and well-being, and operational culture from personnel across all departments and levels of the yachting sector. The data will offer invaluable insights into safety practices across the global yachting fleet, identifying patterns, challenges, and opportunities for improvement. The findings are expected to influence future safety standards and best practices throughout the sector. That's all we have for this month. Thanks for listening.